I'd like now to welcome to the program Michelle Herling. She is the producer of Minds Interrupted, an evening of monologues, which is happening this Saturday, the 24th of March in Los Alamos. And John Harnish, he's a retired Army officer and educator, and he was a presenter in the first evening of Minds Interrupted. And Anne Albrink, who is a lawyer here in Santa Fe, and she's a performer in the Saturday night event. All three are members of NAMI, which stands for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Thank you very much.
So, Michelle, Minds Interrupted, what is it? What's the evening all about?
The evening is an evening of six people on stage sharing their heartfelt stories about the impact of mental illness on their lives. And they are either going to be people who have an illness or family members who have a loved one with an illness.
And how did this whole thing come about?
It came about as a result of a program that NAMI Santa Fe puts on called Family to Family. It's an educational program, an incredibly dynamic program for family members who have loved ones with mental illness. And as I took that program, and as a result of it, I came up with this idea of wanting to advocate for people with mental illness. I have a brother with a mental illness, and I wanted to advocate for people with mental illness in a bigger way than just for my brother. And so Minds Interrupted was an idea I conceived of. And the NAMI Santa Fe board took off on it, and Rosemary Zebert came on board as co-creator of it, and we were off and running. We were only going to do it one time in Santa Fe, but then people from other parts of New Mexico reached out to us, because every time we go in, we work with residents of that area.
And so you chose Los Alamos this time as a place where you wanted to work specifically with Los Alamos residents?
Yes. We have, someone had invited us to come up and do this program up in Los Alamos, and so we reached out to residents there. We found three family members. It's the first time ever we're putting three family members on stage. It's a very powerful, poignant pulling together of two different perspectives.
Together in one performance, so to speak?
In one performance, yeah. So we have three people from Los Alamos and two people from Santa Fe and one person from Española.
Let's talk to some of the folks who've either presented or are presenting in Minds Interrupted. Anne, I don't know how much you want to talk about your own story, but what was it like for you to decide to join this group and engage in telling your own story, which must be risky to do in some ways?
Well, it is, but now that I'm older, it doesn't matter so much. I don't think I would have done this in my 40s or even my 50s. I saw the first monologues that came on in Santa Fe in 2008, and I was very deeply touched, and I got involved with NAMI. And this is sort of the culmination in, not culmination, I hope, but it's a big step in my involvement in NAMI.
So you, Anne, when you were a young woman, started, as I guess they would say in the medical profession, exhibiting symptoms, but didn't get a diagnosis for a long time.
That's right. I got a tentative diagnosis in my early 20s of, well, I picked the diagnosis, actually.
Which is weird.
Well, it was weird to me, too. I was in the mental hospital. I'd been there for 5 weeks, and at the end of it, the doctor gave me a choice of three different diagnoses, and the one that sounded the best to me was schizophrenic reaction, so that's the one I picked.
And that turned out not to be accurate or helpful.
Right. I had had some psychosis in my first episode in my early 20s, and that didn't happen again. It wasn't until I actually heard the diagnosis of bipolar that I realized, oh yes, of course that's what I was. I had every single symptom. Well, not every symptom. Thank God my father was careful enough with money that I didn't spend my life away in terms of getting into debt. But other than that, I had all the symptoms of bipolar.
Which was basically what they call manic depressive.
That's correct.
So some moments where you feel on top of the world and you have to sleep for days at a time. And
that's it. And I talk 24 hours a day, and I walked everywhere without looking to the left or right when I crossed the street. And that was really a... it wasn't for me the great, oh, I'd love to go back to that state again that it is for some people who have manic depression. But it certainly was better than the depression part of the illness. The depression part is to be the pits.
Yeah. Now, you say it's not something you'd like to go back to, but so many people, and I think you talk about this a little bit in your writing, have this tremendous confidence and kind of intellectual and sense of, I can do anything. And did you feel that?
Oh, yeah. Especially when I was in law school, I had an episode. And it comes upon you gradually. So I got more and more confident and more outgoing and more assertive. And eventually I asserted myself into the talking 24 hours a day, not sleeping, et cetera, and so forth. And they carted me away to UNM Medical. So,
did it have any benefits for you, for example, as a student?
I don't know. They say that people with manic depression are unusually imaginative. And I've always been gifted with an ability to be verbally eloquent, and that helped me a lot in law school. I won the entire moot court competition when I competed in law school, and that was because of my verbal abilities. So in some ways, things, the good parts of your personality go hand in hand, I think.
When you were in those episodes, did you know there was something wrong?
No, only people kept telling me there was something wrong. And so it was not a surprise to me when I got carted away, but I didn't have any insight about it until I got all the meds and crashed.
We're talking about Minds Interrupted, an evening of monologues, which is happening this Saturday night. Let's turn to John Harnish for a moment. You wrote a monologue a couple of years ago about a family member. Is that right?
Yes, our daughter, our third child, Helen.
And what motivated you to write? What was the situation that you were writing about with your daughter?
Well, like others, when I was approached to participate in this, I went back to my experience with Family to Family, the NAMI program on mental illness, which is for family members of mentally ill people. And it helped us so much, my wife and I, and my older daughter, that I realized this was an opportunity to give back or share some valuable information that might help someone else. Our daughter, Helen, we came to find out after many, many years that she, in fact, didn't have what is commonly referred to as a learning disability, but a developmental disability. And on top of that, she was diagnosed with mental illness.
And what's the difference between learning and developmental disability?
The difference is a total lack of executive functions when someone is developmentally disabled. That is, they have difficult time understanding situations, reading between the lines, insight, foresight, looking back and learning from past mistakes so that they're not repeated in the future. Those kinds of things are much more problematic for someone who is developmentally disabled.
What were some of the stresses on you and your wife as parents dealing with a daughter who had these problems?
Well, we basically shepherded her through special education successfully through most of her schooling years. But then as she graduated from high school and began to move out into the world, she developed a variety of symptoms that were unusual, such as extreme anxiety over very normal situations. And so we actually brought her in for a diagnosis, and over the next year or two, she underwent a series of different diagnoses, starting with depression, including anxiety disorder, agoraphobia, and finally even schizophrenia. So this was about the time she was ready to turn 20 years old, and now she's 38, or 37. All those different early diagnoses have settled down into a depression and anxiety disorder. But my talk in the monologues was the journey from when she was even a very young child to now, and we're still on the journey, helping her navigate through life. And not only what the challenge was for us, but also what the insights were to have a child with those kinds of disabilities and mental illness, and how that affects everybody in the family, and how we learn from that, even about ourselves.
Say more about that. What are some of the things that you learned about yourselves?
Well, one of the ones that that was especially true for me personally was I tend to be a fixer. You know, I like to fix things, to include a broken fence or a vacuum cleaner that doesn't work. But I also like to be helpful to people who have difficulties in life and be a kind of a strong person for them. And so I've always tried to fix Helen, you know, tried to help her with schoolwork, and then finally tried to help her with the symptoms of the disease, the brain disease, and the things that she suffered because she wasn't on a par with her peers. So the insight was, I can't fix that, and I ought to stop trying and find a different way to relate and to help, rather than always thinking I can play God and fix something that is not fixable, really. It's possible to help a person with mental illness cope and recover and learn to live with the disability or the illness. It's not possible to fix it.
Did that transfer into how you related to other people who came to you with problems, that you were less likely to try to fix them too?
Absolutely. It gave me great insight into other people with mental illness or disabilities of any kind.
And when you embarked on the process of writing this monologue that you're going to read on Saturday night, and you went through the whole process, and you're working with other people in the monologues and with the director and so on, did you feel like it was a kind of a healing process for you in looking back at your life and the illnesses that you've suffered?
It really was. I think I had put under the rug, so to speak, the painful part of the depressions. I'd always sort of focused on the amusing stories of the stupid things I did when I was in my manic stage. But the months and months of just feeling awful, I had put under the rug, and bringing it back forward in this process was really healing for me. I felt exhausted, but I felt a good exhaustion.
Now, Michelle, let's talk about the bigger picture. I mean, everybody here is part of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about the organization, but above all, this question of what people who are listening to this show today, for example, might not know about mental illness, how common it is, and how it affects so many people's lives.
That's really true. The statistics keep changing, and they are now 1 in 4 American families are impacted by mental illness. I just came down from Los Alamos. I've spent a couple of days there talking with teenagers who were having a unit on mental illness and the different disorders. And we were bringing them the stories. One of the presenters from Los Alamos, who is in college, came with me and shared his story, and I talked about the monologues. And they were really amazed to find out that the impact of these illnesses is so prevalent amongst teenagers, amongst adults.
I wonder how much of that prevalence and perhaps the increase in numbers has to do with post-traumatic stress. Do you have any sense of that?
I really don't. Of course, post-traumatic stress disorder has really come to the foreground because of our soldiers, our armed forces in Afghanistan and Iraq, and reaching back into Vietnam. But I don't have numbers and statistics.
And it's so much an experience of women who are continually being assaulted and victims of domestic violence and rape and bullying and all these kinds of things, too.
Yes, absolutely.
About one in four families are affected by a severely mentally ill person. And the mental illness is something which has not ever been treated like diabetes or high blood pressure or cancer. And I think we're hoping that the monologues are going to put us away from the stigma that we've suffered and put us back into the fact that this is a biology-based illness. This is not something that our mothers did to us.
Except when it is.
Well, mothers can hurt, but mothers can also help.
I guess I just mean that some illnesses are biologically based. Some are caused by trauma. I mean, these people who come back from war or whatever, they're just not the same people as they were before. But then, as you say, if it were to be treated like diabetes or some other illness, how would that be different for you in your life?
Well, I think all of us are born with certain vulnerabilities, and our environment, our families, and our experiences as we grow up affect these vulnerabilities in a different way. I know that the research that you see on places like Charlie Rose show that they're finding genes that are associated with schizophrenia, and they are finding analyzing blood and analyzing other chemical things in a person's body help psychiatrists pinpoint treatments that help. And I know with me, when I first started out, they were giving me Thorazine and heavy electric shock treatments and things that made me sort of like a zombie. And now they have all these new medications that really pinpoint your symptoms and help you become yourself more so that you can take care of things.
We're talking about Minds Interrupted, an evening of monologues, this Saturday evening. Now, Michelle Herling, you are the founder of the Compassionate Touch Network. What is that all about?
That's an organization that I founded that promotes community health through education, healing, and the arts. And Minds Interrupted is a major project of the Compassionate Touch Network now. So we are co-producers of the monologues along with NAMI Santa Fe for the Los Alamos monologues.
And you've got people coming from high school. You've got families of folks who were in the monologues. You've got people from the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And we hope just regular people who might be listening to this show or who've just heard about it.
Yes, absolutely. Everyone is invited. The reason we do these stories on stage is because we want to invite the public to come and hear these stories. We know that if you do not have a family member or yourself do not have a mental illness, that you probably know someone, either as a teacher or you might have a friend who has a mental illness. Andrew, who I've been working with these last couple of days in the high school, has said that it was his college roommate that called his parents and said, "Something is awfully wrong with your son. You need to get out here." And they went out immediately and began to help him find his path back from his illness.
I think there's another part of this that I always think about when I hear these stories, which is that many of these stories, for example, manic depression, are really extreme versions of what so many quote-unquote normal people go through in much more mild ways in their lives. Everybody experiences, many people experience depression, and there is a kind of relating that we can do from our own experience, even if our own experience isn't that extreme. I don't know if you guys feel that way.
Well, I would say that there's some truth in that. On the other hand, someone who has a serious clinical mental illness often experiences what we term a psychotic break, where they actually are kind of out of their mind and imagining things to be there that are not there, or things that are there, they're imagining them to be something different, and they hear voices and they respond to stimuli that are in their brain but are not in fact real, but they cannot tell that those stimuli are not real. And so that really separates them from a person who does not have a diagnosed mental illness. And it is just very sad, but not necessarily clinically depressed, or someone who is very euphoric but not exactly manic. There is a difference, a huge difference.
I think the diagnoses really are an art. I mean, the science part of this is just being worked on all the time, and it's difficult. Most of these stories have people starting out with one diagnosis and ending with another.
And these diagnoses are, to some extent, I mean, there's a sense of arbitrariness when you look at how the DSM manuals are compiled, which is 12 guys in a room making decisions about what the new version is going to say. It's very tricky business.
But it's getting better, and as Anne said, technology, which has advanced so much in the last 20 years, 30 years, to study the brain and find out what those chemical imbalances exactly are and what's going on with the transmission of electrical signals and where they break down, is leading to medications that are constantly evolving and more pertinent to what's actually going on in the brain.
And I know a lot of friends of mine who have mental illnesses experiment for a long periods of time with different cocktails of medications with their psychiatrists until they reach the place that is best for them. And it is an art, as Michelle was saying. It's not, in that way, it's not a science yet. You don't just put in your blood and come out with what your medication should be.
And even after the trial and error period, the body and the mind can get used to certain medications and become less responsive. And at that time, the medication often has to be changed in order to have the same results.
The evening is Minds Interrupted, an evening of monologues. Michelle Herling is the producer. She's also the founder of the Compassionate Touch Network, and John Harnish is a retired Army officer and educator. He was in the first Minds Interrupted. Ann Albrink is a Santa Fe lawyer. She's a performer in the Saturday evening event. It's Saturday, the 24th of March at 7 o'clock at the Duane Smith Auditorium in Los Alamos at 1300 Diamond Drive. For more information, you can go to mindsinterrupted.com. You can also go to namisantafe.org. NAMI is N-A-M-I. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Oh, thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.